Dear Dr. Shedd, you've heard of the Sphinx? Well, I married it. It never has been very good, but lately it is getting even worse. Do you know how barren it can be living with someone who makes a few guttural sounds? And those are only when he wants something like sex or food or change the channel. No fooling, I feel like I am living with a total stranger, and lately I am beginning to wonder. What I mean is, I happen to be the kind of woman who always had plenty of friends, and I can't help wondering what real love is like. Is there anything a woman can do to get a man to communicate? Please help me.
This is a question that countless numbers of women are asking every day. And if you're one of them who's still searching for an answer, then seek no more. On this Fun Family Forum cassette, one of the real experts on the subject is going to share with you 9 helpful hints which you can begin using today to get your husband to communicate. To be sure, you won't get instant results, but if you'll put into practice these 9 suggestions, you can be assured of a gradual success in overcoming this dilemma in your marriage relationship. Our expert is Charlie Shedd, a minister, author, newspaper columnist, seminar and conference leader, and commentator on the radio program Parent Talk. In each of these roles, he has dealt extensively with the problems and difficulties related to marriage and family life. He is therefore one of the most qualified and articulate spokesmen for this particular subject on how you can get your husband to open up and communicate freely with you. The content of this tape has been divided into several individual segments for your convenience in listening and responding to the material. In the first 19 minutes, you'll hear Dr. Shedd present his 9 helpful hints for getting your husband to communicate. Then, on the remainder of the tape, you'll hear a point-by-point review of each of his suggestions, including personal comments and testimonies from several participants in his Fun Family seminars, as well as related questions and answers that were discussed at those seminars. At appropriate places during the review section, we give you the opportunity to stop the tape and reflect on the comments presented. If you're listening with a group of other wives, these breaks can best be used for group discussion and sharing of individual reactions. Whether you're listening by yourself or with others, it's our sincere desire that this Fun Family Forum cassette resource will be the enabling tool that will help you to turn your silent husband into a free-flowing communicator. Here now is Charlie Shedd to speak on So Your Husband Won't Talk, Helpful Hints on Opening Him Up.
Some of the things that I am saying are based on my new book, Talk to Me, How to Get Your Husband to Communicate and Turn Your Marriage into a Great Friendship, and how we got started on this, Martha and I. We do all of my writing together now, and how we got started on this is a letter which I would like to read you out of our file, excerpts from a long letter of 4 or 5 pages. Just enough, you get the gist. Dear Dr. Shedd, you've heard of the Sphinx? Well, I married it. It never has been very good, but lately it is getting even worse. Do you think she means him? He is getting worse, or the whole deal is getting worse? It never has been very good, but lately it is getting even worse. Do you know how barren it can be living with someone who makes a few guttural sounds? And those are only when he wants something like sex or food or change the channel. No fooling, I feel like I am living with a total stranger, and lately I am beginning to wonder. What I mean is, I happen to be the kind of woman who always had plenty of friends, and I can't help wondering what real love is like. And then she goes on to say that she's a Christian. She's trying to be a Christian. She's trying awfully hard to be a Christian about this. She says, sometimes it scares me how I am thinking now. Is there anything a woman can do to get a man to communicate? Please help me. Yes, there are some things that a woman can do to get a man to communicate, and I'd like to share with you a few of these out of the experiences we've had with some very smart women who got the job done, at least enough to go on living with the fellow. And then I'd like to tell you about the smartest woman I know and some of the things she's done to get a very barricaded man to open up. Because that's really how it was in our marriage when we began our relationship together permanently. Now, I think it is only fair to start by saying that some men are hopeless.
Oh, I'm sorry to say that. The Bible says, with God, all things are possible.
And I believe it, don't you?
But those first two words are all important, aren't they? With God.
If He won't let you in, if He won't let a counselor in, if He won't let God in, about all you can do is to be sure His insurance policies are in good order, on account of He's going to die 7 years sooner than other men. Do you know that on the average you're going to be a widow for 7 years? If you're a normal woman, your relationship is the average. It'll be seven, some insurance companies say 11. And they say the man who might go first is the most barricaded man of all. The one who has to lie so much out there in his business. He can't express himself, so every time that he swallows his pride, he ties the band a little tighter around his heart. So just keep his insurance policy in good order, and that's the only hope I have for you in the case of a hopeless man. Sorry about that. But having got that out of the way, let's talk about some of the things that really might work. First, learn his interests. Diane is married to a stock market analyst straight from Dullesville. This guy has figures going around in his head even when he's not at the office. He brings a satchel home, constantly reading the reports, watching the ticker tapes. So she decided that she would try and learn more about his field, and this is what she did. She put aside a little money from the grocery budget and took some other funds, small funds that she had, got her hands on every cent she could get her hands on, and then she went to a stock market amateur's course and began to invest a little, and she lost. Only when she kept at it, she began to win a few. And today, she says he even asks her some advice. And now and then, she says, the conversation spills over into other fields because he's beginning to respect the fact that here is a woman from whom he can glean a little knowledge about how a lay person thinks in the market. Okay, learn his interests. One possibility. You already knew that, so let's go on. Number two, ask his advice. I will never forget the night that Martha sat me down in the bay window in our church in Nebraska. Now, I had been counseling all day that day with people. I counseled all the time with people in our church in Nebraska. They came from all over the area to counsel with me. I guess I was helping them. They came and they brought their friends and their friends sent their friends. So I was advising them about marital problems. I was advising alcoholics, teenagers, girls, pregnant, unmarried. The woman who had to put up with an alcoholic, I was giving out all this big fat advice. You know why? One of the reasons was they didn't have anybody else to do it in that town. There were no psychiatrists, no counselors. I was it. And I will never forget that night when I went home. And she sat me down in the picture window. First she fed me. Very good idea. And then she said, honey, you've got to help me. I have a problem. You understand? I need some advice. Big deal. Meanwhile, back at the bungalow, this woman wondering, does anybody care about my problem? It worked, girls, it worked. For the first time, I guess, for the first time, and we've been married several years, I really listened to this woman's problem. I never thought she'd have a problem. She shouldn't have a problem. She was married to me. Okay, ask his advice. It worked at our house. It might work at yours. Number three, check your own output. You know this wonderful story about the little boy who comes home. And he says to his daddy, he's working on a paper on women's lib, he says to his daddy, Daddy, I'm writing this essay on women's lib, can you help me? And his father from behind the sports page said, I don't know much about it, go ask your mother. And he said, but Daddy, I didn't want to know that much. Some women like Tennyson's book go babbling on forever, and the poor guy can't get a word in edgewise. And I remember Shirley, I've seen her do this so many times. Shirley's husband is a major executive in one of the nation's largest conglomerates. This guy is thinking million-dollar deals even when he's home. But he's crazy about Shirley. Because we were very good friends, we were invited often into their home. And I remember the last time we were invited there, she pulled a thing we'd seen her pull any number of times. She started to tell about their home up in New England from which they'd moved. This was in Houston, Texas, where they were living now. And she was telling how the backyard rolled down the slope into the creek, lovely, the trees, and right in the middle of it, she stopped and she said, "Oh, Jim, you finish it for me, will you? I just love to hear you tell about it." And so he finished it. And then Shirley and Martha got up to go to the kitchen to get the dessert, and I looked at Jim and I said, "That's some woman you got, Jim." "Yeah," he said, "Charlie, she's a con job, isn't she?" But he said, "I love her for it." And he did. A guy with multi-million dollar deals loved a little con woman who could con him into talking. Check your own output. That's the point. Here's number four. Time out together alone. Now, we won't go into this in great detail because I've covered it elsewhere. But once a week, no exceptions, for 35 years, we've been out for one date together alone. Now, it's more often than that, because the more you're together alone, the more you want to be together alone. The deeper the friendship you build, the more you want to expand on that friendship. And I would suggest, if he won't think of it, that you might get a commitment from him toward this end. I don't think that catch as catch can at home is good enough. And when you're in the bedroom or the kids are asleep at night, there are other things to be talking about, thinking about, and doing. So once a week, a date, and we go out together just to read each other's souls and look into each other's eyes and talk about what's happening inside each other. Time together alone. Number five is mutual self-analysis, which we have also discussed. Here's a letter, dear Dr. Shedd. David wouldn't be caught dead at a counselor's office. He won't even go to our minister. What can I do? Not much, except maybe a commitment from him that the two of you together will work on what's going on inside. If he would agree to do this, you've lengthened his life, plus expanded your communication points, and you've got a tremendous thing going. To be each other's psychiatrist, to share the fears, the guilt, the hurt, the worries, honestly, openly. Here's number six. Do you need to apologize? Have you ever betrayed his trust? Has he ever told you something and you dropped it somewhere? I'm thinking of Noreen. Noreen, one time at a bridge party, said something about Wally that got back to Wally, and it was pretty negative. It really was rather casual, the way she said it, but by the time it got back to him, it had been blown all out of proportion. And I remember Wally saying to me, "I will never again tell Noreen anything that needs to be kept quiet." Isn't that tragic? Well, just in case there might be need of an apology, I would hope that you would have the grace to say, "I'm sorry. Forgive me. I'd like to start over." And I hope that he would be acceptable of your offering. This is number seven. Mercy. Let me talk to you about mercy that we've covered in other areas. The real expediting of mercy in a marriage. How are you going to get the job done? The smartest thing I ever heard was a wife who did this with her husband. When they were first married, she was terribly jealous of him because she was the shy kind who had been brought up in a reserved sort of setting. Whereas he wasn't this way at all. He moved fast around people, patted people on the back, was a hail fellow well met type, and she was jealous, worried, particularly jealous of you know what. And it caused a lot of difficulty in their marriage. The first few years of their marriage, it was tough going. For her especially, but also for him, because he knew she was worried. And then one day, she settled that, and she came to him and she said, "Darling, I want you to know something. I have decided I am never again going to be jealous. I've turned my jealousy over to the Lord. Never again. And I want to tell you that the thing that has really made me jealous and the thing that has really worried me is that someday you would have an affair with another woman. Now I want you to know that if you do have an affair with another woman, if something should happen that you get involved with another woman, you can come home and tell me about it. And I will just love you. And we will pray together. And I want you to know that while you are loving the other woman, in the very act, I want you to know I'm there in the wings loving you." Wow. What a way to ruin a man's fun. Okay. I want to tell you that that man has never once been unfaithful to his wife. And I'll give you one guess as to why I know. Because it was my Martha who was that wise, getting me to communicate. Who else would you want to look for to talk to besides a woman like that? This is grace, girls. Pure, perfect, unadulterated grace. Now, I'm not recommending that for every marriage, oh no. It worked great for ours, and maybe it would work for yours. But perhaps you should decide in this whole business of communication, do I love this man so much that no matter what he did, I would love him? And if I do, maybe I should tell him that. That is one way that one woman held one man to a faithfulness of their marriage vows. Mercy. Now, I have been faithful to Martha all these years, not because I am good, do you understand that? But because she is. Because she stands right at the center of the grace of God and lets that grace flow out from her to me. One way to get a husband to communicate. All right, let's move to sex. One of the smartest women I know about this, Martha knows her now too, and I'll tell you how Martha happens to know her now, but the lady's name is Libby. Libby is married to a very prosperous real estate man. And when she came to me a year or so ago, Libby said that she was afraid that her husband was getting interested in his secretary. In fact, she knew he was very interested in his secretary, and she was sure that some things were going on, and from all she said, I'm sure there were too. It was a very sexy secretary who, with her 80 words a minute, knew how to do a few other things. Now, Libby, you would have to know, is from Mississippi or Tennessee, someplace in the South, and she is the perfect Southern lady, kind of a China doll type. In fact, when you talk to Libby, you almost expect to see a plantation in the background. That's how Southern Libby is. Naive. Oh, so naive. Beautiful, and quite willing, as you will see. Libby came to me to check a possibility. She said, "I have a brother who is a real swinger, and he has some very fine prostitute friends." So, Libby made a date through her brother with a prostitute. And she went and spent an hour with the prostitute. And she said to the prostitute, "What do you girls do to keep a man coming back? You must be doing some things I'm not doing." And the prostitute told her. And two or three months ago, Martha and I were walking across the lobby in the Atlanta airport when all of a sudden we heard, "Oh, Dr. Shedd, oh, Dr. Shedd." And here came Libby. And she threw her arms around me and she said, "It worked, it worked." Oh, she said, "Everything is just perfect. He'd never have time for anybody else now, nor the energy. And besides," she says, "I'm having fun for the first time." Okay. And now they're planning a trip to Europe, Libby and this man. Isn't that nice? Well, there are some women who get out their hammers and beat on a guy who is interested in his sexy secretary at 80 words a minute and other things. And there are some women who withdraw and act hurt. And then there's a woman like Libby He says, let's find out what's going on. Maybe we could celebrate some of these same celebrations in our love. All right. Finally, prayer. If you could get your man to pray with you, to really pray with you, you'd have the secret of secrets. And really, I've got to tell you that somebody asked me yesterday, when did your marriage really get turned on? We've been married 35 years. In answer to that question, we thought back about it, and we talked about it some, and we decided the only right answer to that is when we began praying together, 20 years ago. We committed our lives to a life of prayer together. I would urge you to give this every serious attention, because when you begin praying together, what happens? Well, the Christian says when you pray, what happens is that the Lord Jesus moves in to your heart and to the heart of the other person who is praying with you, and He turns you on to each other, to the needs around you, to all of life, where two or three are gathered together in My name, the Scripture says, there am I in the midst of them. And we would witness to you that this is what happened in our life, that our great, great love started in that day when we said, it isn't going the way it should just between the two of us. Maybe what we need is a third influence. And when we made our duet of prayer a real trinity, opening up to the Lord, He came. And it's been good ever since.
There you have Charlie Shedd's advice for helping your husband to open up and communicate with you. If you're listening to this tape with a group of wives, why not stop the tape and discuss these ideas of Charlie's? If you feel free to do so, each of you might, in confidence of course, share your own particular circumstance and which of these suggestions would be most helpful for you to use. When you've finished your discussion, continue your listening as we review in more depth each of these suggestions. For now, turn off the tape while you share together your immediate reactions to Charlie's presentation. The first suggestion Charlie offered for opening up your husband to communicate was to learn his interests. You'll recall that he told a story about a girl named Diane who is married to a stock market analyst. He was so busy, even at home, with the stock market reports and watching the ticker tapes, that he had little time or interest, it seemed, in his wife. So she made the effort to learn about his field of work, and this is what she did.
She put aside a little money from the grocery budget and took some other funds, small funds that she had, got her hands on every cent she could get her hands on, and then she went to a stock market amateur's course and began to invest a little, and she lost. Only, when she kept at it, she began to win a few. And today, she says he even asks her some advice. And now and then, she says, the conversation spills over into other fields, because he's beginning to respect the fact that here is a woman from whom he can glean a little knowledge about how a lay person thinks in the market.
Learn his interests. A good way to begin to open up your husband to communicate. Now pause for a moment and think of the many interests your husband has that you might begin to learn more about. Think of the interests that brought you together, like outdoor activities, cultural events, the arts, music, and so forth. Take this as your first assignment and make a list of the things you and your husband could enjoy doing together if you would make the effort to learn more about his interests. It could be a first giant step in opening up new avenues of communication and growth in your relationship. Turn off the tape and proceed with this assignment. Listen now to some questions and answers which deal with this area of concern that were recorded at the various Fun Family seminars led by Charlie Shedd.
How do you get your husband to make small talk? I asked what happened at work, and he says nothing.
I'm sorry I don't have a good answer for that, except to keep telling him how much you would like to know about what happens. It is possible that he is so frozen by the time he gets home thinking about the horrible things that happened at work that he doesn't even want to talk about them. That's possible. It is possible that he thinks it's none of your business and that the whole thing is such a bore to him that he doesn't want to be bored anymore by discussing it. But until you get him to understand the reasons why he won't tell you and share with you, I go big, as you can see, for the fact that you got to go deep into each other to find out what's bugging. What's the problem? It's natural for a man and a woman to say, hey, I want to tell you about me. And the other listens, and you have this lovely interchange. That's the normal. That's the natural.
How do you make your husband discuss or talk out a problem? He says there is no problem. The chief sitting bull she has written there. How do you get your husband to more freely share his thoughts and plans with you? How can you convince him the importance of communication? And she's interested in him reading letters to Philip. He says he's not interested. How do you get him to do that? Read them.
If he won't read letters to Philip, he could be in that hopeless category. I say this with tongue-in-cheek, but maybe not. There are some people who don't want any help with their problem, and he may be one of them. Other than to tell you the things that I told you at the outset on how to get your husband to communicate, I have nothing further except to say again, if he is one of these hopeless people, sometimes I have known women who have got these hopeless men who just couldn't and wouldn't communicate. I have known them to really blow the whistle on the marriage and say, you either get some help or I'm through with you. I don't recommend breaking up homes, remember? That's not my job. But I have known some women that have done an effective job of saying, I am not going to live on crumbs the rest of my life, and you are either going to find out what's choking you, or I'm going to go find somebody who isn't choked. Now, that's terribly dangerous. And it's terribly dangerous because the next guy you find might be even more choked. He might have, you know, sometimes divorce only leads to a more serious problem. But I would hope you would be spiritually strong enough to stand that kind of marriage, and I do not have any good suggestions other than what we started with.
What about your husband's interest in other women? Could this be a channel for communication?
When you are married, how normal is it for the husband to be ogling after other women? Does this ever end?
It never ends, I hope. One dear lady was a member of the church in Houston, and when her husband died, his good-looking secretary was out at the home. He died very suddenly one Sunday morning, as I remember, and Charlie went immediately, and his good-looking secretary was there. And Ann said, I call her John's second wife. She said, I always said, if John quit looking at good-looking women like these, he's no good to me. And that's how Charlie and I have it figured out. We live on the beach, as we told you, and he loves to look over the girls in bikinis. And we worked out a system where we evaluate them together, and he explains what he likes, and I help him find them. And we have a real good time.
That right there is the answer, girls. If you can encourage him to share with you his thoughts, oh, this is wonderful to have a woman you can share this kind of thought with. You don't have to worry whether you have the dirtiest mind in all the world. Martha and I have a deal, and she's extended. Talk about grace. This is grace, girls. This is what we're talking about, grace. She says, Charlie, as long as you can come home and tell me about it, it's not sin. Let's just say that's the way it is. This is the living word. It's not in the Bible. It's the living word. You come and tell me about it, we'll discuss it, and we'll say that's not sin. Isn't that wonderful? I think that's the answer in our marriage, but it might be different in other marriages. So if he is always arguing, just encourage him.
I was just saying that it's no longer a problem in our marriage, and it hasn't been for years. It was when we were first married, because we've been married 14 years. But beauty is to be admired, and there are times that I'll notice my husband looking at a girl that's walking by, and the biggest thing I wonder about is why. And I ask him, I say, honey, what makes you want to look at another woman? It isn't jealousy, it's just curiosity that makes you wonder why. And I guess it's just something that's God-given to all men. All men must want to do the same thing, because I see all men doing it.
Very good, thank you.
But yeah. I love him in spite of it.
Sure, that's wonderful. Thank you for loving him in spite of it.
Religion is often the obstacle to communication in marriage. Here's a couple of questions that maybe you've been asking.
I believe the man is the head of the family. but he wants to go to a church that I can't feel comfortable in or feel that my children are being taught. Should I go along just because he's the head of the family?
I don't think so. I don't believe that there's anything so bad about families splitting up church-wise. It may come as a shock to you. I like to see it. Family where they all go to the same church, but I've known some wonderful church families where they went to two different churches. Now, listen, gang, get a load of this. The key here is for the altar, the real altar, and the real church to be in the home. If you have a prayer life together, it doesn't matter all that much. If you do separate and go different places, it's a tragedy if you're going different places and you don't have any other religion except what you get on Sunday morning, isn't it? But I wouldn't nag, and if you can stomach whatever he's getting and whatever church he's getting it in, go ahead and go with him. But make the altar in your prayer life the real church, and everything else is simply feeding into the real altar.
What if your husband will not pray or join in Bible study? My husband and I do fine except on religion. He will not attend or discuss. Any suggestions? I still attend Sunday school and church, but no other activities. My husband and I communicate about everything and anything but God. He seems to be afraid to let himself go and admit he needs to rely on someone other than himself. Of course, I can't tell him this and have him accept it. Do I leave it all to God, or what can I do to build this bridge between us and God?
Isn't that beautiful? Steve, these are pensive questions, and I appreciate the intimacy out of which they come. And I wouldn't for a minute treat them in any other way than the most holy way possible. And the most holy way possible, I think, in this case, is to say, you just go on praying, honey, that someday he'll come around, because I don't have any other answer. I don't think many men are going to be pushed into religion. And I think, again, that's sad, because this is the basic communion. But sometimes you go through life without that basic communion. I want you to know that one of the things that turned me around religiously, and boy, was I a super phony. Even when I finished seminary, I was way off base in my theology and in my thinking about myself. And the thing that turned me around more than anything else was watching Martha at her prayers. Reading her Bible alone, quietly, and reading her devotional books. And I began to realize she was getting something out of this, and I finally wanted to drink from the same well.
Let's pause at this point and again give you the opportunity to reflect on these answers and comments. Share your reactions and responses with the others in the group. Turn off the tape. The second helpful hint is to ask your husband's advice. Remember the story Charlie told about his wife?
I will never forget the night that Martha sat me down in the bay window in our church in Nebraska. Now, I had been counseling all day that day with people. I counseled all the time with people in our church in Nebraska. They came from all over the area to counsel with me. And I will never forget that night when I went home. And she sat me down in the picture window. First she fed me. Very good idea. And then she said, "Honey, you've got to help me. I have a problem. You understand? I need some advice." Big deal. Meanwhile, back at the bungalow, this woman, wondering, does anybody care about my problem? It worked, girls, it worked. For the first time, we'd been married several years, I really listened to this woman's problem. I never thought she'd have a problem. She shouldn't have a problem. She's married to me. Okay, ask his advice. It worked at our house. It might work at yours.
Would it? Why not give it a try? He may be like Charlie and not believe that you have any problems, and he may not even have the answers, but hopefully it will get him talking with you about it, and then as he becomes more interested and concerned with how you're handling your problems, he might begin talking more about it with you. However, it's possible that you don't have enough confidence in his ability to help. But this, too, can be dealt with, as one woman told us.
I have a very quiet husband, and I'm not a quiet person, and so I come on rather strong, and he, in the meantime, in all these years, has kind of stayed in the background. I work with senior highs, and he doesn't, and so our interests, you know, are varied at this point. But in communication, this last fall, I had it shown to me. You know, the Bible says that the husband is to be the head of the house, and I have never allowed him to be the head of the house because I didn't really have the confidence that he was in his Christian life where he should be, you know, and so therefore I give him a little bit, but then I take it back because I could do it better, you know, I thought. And the Lord really showed me that until I could back down, what's the scripture that I must become...
I must decrease.
Decrease so that he must increase. Came to me one day when I was going home, and I thought, you know, what's that? What does that mean? All of a sudden it hit me, yeah, wow, you know, you've got to decrease. So this is not easy for me to decrease. But until our college-age daughter left home, and she's a beautiful daughter, but she had, you know, the pains of leaving a home and a standard that was set for her. We can see very, very much now. And she had to become, the Lord had to become hers, and her way of life had to become hers, and she had to cut the umbilical cord, so to speak. And she had some real problems. And we came at odds, my husband and I, in how we were going to handle these problems, more or less. And I was afraid he was going to be too firm, and he was going to shut the door, and she was going to go away, you know, and communication would be cut forever. But I really backed out, and I let him take control of the situation, and you know what? He was beautiful. He did it so much better than I could have ever done it. And I think too many times we women are the ones that cause the communication not to happen in a home. We don't let them communicate with us. We don't allow them to be what they're supposed to be. And now, I'm not saying that it's always, from then on, you know, it's been A1 okay, because I find myself really still wanting to push forward because I'm that type of person. And he allows me to do this because he's that type of person. But we need to reach a happy medium. I need to know when to be quiet and let him assert his authority and then stand behind him. And it's turned out beautiful.
Now, there's a woman who's made a real discovery in learning how to accept her husband as he is and relate with him on that basis. It's very important to express confidence in your husband and give him your full support. Asking his advice is one way of doing that. Now, this participant made a statement that I would like for you to reflect on and discuss its merits. She said, "Sometimes it's we women who don't let our husbands communicate with us." Turn off the tape and discuss your agreements or disagreements with this statement. Are you the talker in your family, giving the other family members little opportunity to share in the conversations? Remember what Charlie said about Shirley?
Some women, like Tennyson's Brook, go babbling on forever, and the poor guy can't get a word in edgewise. Shirley's husband is a major executive in one of the nation's largest conglomerates. This guy is thinking million-dollar deals even when he's home. But he's crazy about Shirley. Because we were very good friends, we were invited often into their home. And I remember the last time we were invited there, she pulled a thing we'd seen her pull any number of times. She started to tell about their home up in New England from which they'd moved. And right in the middle of it, she stopped and she said, "Oh, Jim, you finish it for me, will you? I just love to hear you tell about it." And so he finished it. And then Shirley and Martha got up to go to the kitchen to get the dessert. And I looked at Jim and I said, "That's some woman you got, Jim." "Yeah," he said, "Charlie, she's a con job, isn't she?" But he said, "I love her for it." And he did. A guy with multi-million-dollar deals loved a little con woman who could con him into talking. Check your own output. That's the point.
And we're going to give you the chance right now to check your output by answering some questions and scoring yourself as far as a grade is concerned. You might want to jot these questions down on paper as I read them for a quicker referral, or stop the tape after each one and write out or discuss your answer. For scoring purposes, we suggest you use the 1 to 100 grading system, with 70 as the passing level. Okay, if you're ready to write, here are the questions. Number 1, do you tend to dominate all or most of the conversation? Do you tend to dominate all or most of the conversation? Number two, in your conversations, do you really try to understand your husband's feelings about what he is saying? In your conversations, do you really try to understand your husband's feelings about what he is saying? Number three, when your husband is talking, do you unnecessarily interrupt him to either correct or to finish telling the story yourself? When your husband is talking, do you unnecessarily interrupt him to either correct him or to finish telling the story yourself? Question number four, do you feel like that you always have to be in agreement with each other? Do you feel like that you always have to be in agreement with each other? Number five, are you really interested in his viewpoint, or are you more concerned about whether he agrees with you or not? Are you really interested in his viewpoint, or are you more concerned about whether he agrees with you or not? Question number six. How effective are you at communicating things you don't like? How effective are you at communicating things you don't like? Number seven, do you really try to get your husband to communicate? How effective are you? Do you really try to get your husband to communicate? How effective are you? The next suggestion is time out together alone on a date once a week. You'll recall that Charlie said,
the more you're together alone, the more you want to be together alone. The deeper the friendship you build, the more you want to expand on that friendship.
And on another occasion, he had this to say about spending time together alone and the need for a commitment.
I think that in a vital marriage, there has to be time spent together, eyeball to eyeball, alone, away from the phone, away from the doorbell, away from the children. And I am for vacations together, I am for weekends together, I am for trips together. But Martha and I have found that one of the great blessings of our marriage has been that commitment we made to each other that we would have one date a week. And if your husband won't think of it, you better. Because some of you are living in the hope that someday down the road, everything will clear up. And you'll start spending time together. You won't. Never will. Unless you have a commitment in this direction. So, time together alone, once a week, a date. We even have gotten to the place where our kids will check us on Saturday to be sure we've been out together, because they love the idea that Mom and Dad love each other that much.
Spending time together alone is smart operating for communication. And you'll be smart by beginning now to plan with your husband for those once-a-week dates alone with each other. Stop the tape and think about how many places you might go to, and when would be the best times for you and your husband to go. Eating out together alone can be a great time for communication. Turn off the tape. Helpful hint number five is mutual self-analysis, an experience of self-examination and sharing with each other what's going on inside of you.
This is where we spend 15 minutes a day discussing the things that are going on inside Charlie and Martha. I've been gone 2 days now, and so I owe her 30 minutes. And she'll get it, because this is a sacred trust to us that we talk about what's going on inside you, John, what's going on inside you, Helen. Let's discuss these things together. And we do this through a method of marking in a book that we're reading in common and then talking about the places where we find our flaky selves and sharing these inner problems. Sometimes a man will go for this, and it's been a big thing for us. We're psychiatrists, I guess, to each other, up to a point. If you're bad off and if you're psychotic, then this wouldn't work. But if you're just neurotic like the rest of us, it may be simply terrific.
Now, very closely related to this practice of mutual self-analysis is mercy, complete and total acceptance of the other person as they are and loving them in spite of it.
Do you know that a man will never reveal himself to a woman unless he knows what he reveals will be received in mercy? if some way you can get it across to him, I will treat with mercy anything you give me. I will not be judgmental. I will be compassionate. Oh, I may blow my stack, but I'll apologize. Because basically, the relationship is built on grace. And that's first.
How do you stand on this issue? How much of grace and mercy is there within your relationship? You'll recall that in his presentation, Charlie talked about this in regards to his own marriage and how that his wife, Martha, came to stand in the center of grace when she was able to say,
"Darling, I want you to know something. I have decided I am never again going to be jealous. I've turned my jealousy over to the Lord. Never again. And I want to tell you that the thing that has really made me jealous and the thing that has really worried me is that someday you would have an affair with another woman. Now I want you to know, if something should happen that you get involved with another woman, you can come home and tell me about it. And I will just love you. And we will pray together. And I want you to know that while you are loving the other woman, in the very act, I want you to know I'm there in the wings loving you. This is grace, girls. Pure, perfect, unadulterated grace. Now, I'm not recommending that for every marriage, oh no. It worked great for ours, and maybe it would work for yours. But perhaps you should decide in this whole business of communication, do I love this man so much that no matter what he did, I would love him? And if I do, maybe I should tell him that.
This is a question that every wife must ultimately answer. Turn off the tape and think seriously about your response. If you feel free to do so, discuss your feelings and reactions with the group. Another meaning of mercy is trust. And here are a question and a comment that hopefully will be a source of help.
Once someone is unfaithful, how do you trust again or stop being suspicious?
You don't. For a long time, you don't. When a man has been unfaithful, it's very normal for you to wonder where he is and for you to have a hard time believing that he could be faithful again. Now, I don't know any way to handle this, girls, except by prayer and time. I do think that you have to settle somewhere in your mind how much you love him and how much you're going to forgive. Now, I think when Martha told me that she was going to be there if I got into an affair, she'd be there loving me, I think that she had a pretty good feeling that it would work with me. And there's some men I don't think it'll work with, but I think it would work with a whole lot more than women know. Because a man is like a child. You give him something to live up to. So maybe for this woman who had to ask that question, she might do a whole lot for herself and him too. She'd say, "Okay, you were unfaithful to me and I've forgiven you, and maybe you'll be unfaithful to me again. But I have made the decision." You've got to make the decision, of course. But if you could say to him, "I've made the decision that even if you are unfaithful to me, I'm going to love you." It could be that would do more for him than anything. I don't know. I think your pastors could help you determine that. But I'm sorry.
Trust. Having been a military wife and long separations, if you don't have a whole lot of trust, and no jealousies, I mean, you just can't survive that way. And we've been talking about communications. We've communicated, our whole marriage has been by USA mail for, what, 2 years? And you just can't keep a marriage going if you don't have complete trust and no jealousy. Not with long separations.
We buy this package that you just got to have trust. Now, how are you going to get it?
Well,
it's one thing to say you better trust each other, but yeah, how are you really going to trust each other?
It's easy to me. If there was any reason for not trusting a person, I think it would be very clear.
You wouldn't have married him in the first place.
No,
I don't.
I wouldn't have married him in the first place because I completely trust him, and I've never, at any time, had any reason not to, and I know that.
I agree.
In other words, what you're saying is that You trust because your mate is trustable.
That's right. You get to feel secure. He never gives you a reason to doubt him when he's home, so why should you doubt him when he's gone? Proximity doesn't mean that necessarily he's going to be faithful just because he's in the neighborhood.
Mercy, grace, trust. Loaded words, heavy concepts. But they are essential ingredients for any marriage relationship that's going to survive the constant, everyday pressures of this contemporary, so-called modern society. Again, stop the tape and reflect inwardly on these ideas expressed. Maybe discuss them among your group. Recall also the possibility of establishing a daily time for communication for the purpose of mutual self-analysis. Turn off the tape. Another of the secrets to getting your husband to communicate is the willingness to apologize when you're in the wrong. At another of his Fun Family seminars, Charlie discussed this subject in more detail. He said,
there is a common phrase that's going around that comes out of a book that went into a movie that millions of people saw, and it says, love is never having to say you're sorry. Only one thing wrong with that. It's not true. In addition to the three words, I love you, the words, I'm sorry, honey, are of tremendous importance in our marriage and in most of the marriages I know. So I thought maybe there might be some woman who should make an apology to her husband at some point. Did you betray his trust? It's so hard for a man to forgive. If he ever discovered that you talked outside the family circle, putting him down, look out. This will kill it every time, that communication between you.
And he illustrated this in his presentation on this tape with the story about Noreen.
I'm thinking of Noreen. Noreen, one time at a bridge party, said something about Wally that got back to Wally, and it was pretty naive. It really was rather casual, the way she said it, but by the time it got back to him, it had been blown all out of proportion. And I remember Wally saying to me, I will never again tell Noreen anything that needs to be kept quiet. Isn't that tragic? Well, just in case there might be need of an apology, I would hope that you would have the grace to say, I'm sorry. Forgive me. I'd like to start over. And I hope that he would be acceptable of your offering.
Apologizing and saying you're sorry is never easy. It usually requires much courage and faith. But again, here's another of those essential ingredients to a happy marriage, and one that encourages communication both ways.
I think it's so important for us gals, and for you men, too. You know, when something's gone wrong, if you just go and say, I'm sorry, and it's awfully hard to do, but those two words mean so much, I think. And like Bob and I, we never go to bed until I apologize, or he does. And usually it's my fault. but I don't want him to say that. That it's my fault.
You want to say that.
I want to say that.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
I think it's so important. And to think of the other one first. So often we just get involved with our own thinking and our own thing, and we forget about our mate. And I think it's wonderful that you can tell them that you think they're pretty nice, and they're good-looking, too, and have a merry heart. Boy, merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth up the bones. And I don't intend for my old bones to be dried up.
Yes. I think one of the most important things is to be considerate of one another. Small things mount up, and it's the little things that break your back. You hurdle the big things, but it's the mounting little things that will tear you up. So if you just have just plain old good manners and be considerate of one another, it helps.
The sense of humor takes you over a lot of rough spots in a marriage. And if you can just stop at that critical time and somebody somewhere see the humorous part of it, then you can get over the rough hurdle. And it won't be quite so serious or quite so bad. It has helped me over so many rough spots in marriage and any place I've been.
If I can just stop for 1 minute when everything's the worst and somewhere or other pluck out something that kind of strikes me a little bit light, then I can get over the deeper side, the darker side.
I'm thinking of a woman who wrote me a letter in which she said, I kept thinking that I needed a new husband. And then I began to face the facts. And I realized my husband needed a new wife. And I started by saying to him, I want to be your new wife. I'm sorry. Let's start over.
Maybe you need to say that. If so, we hope you will. Take some time now to reflect on the question, do you need to apologize? Or maybe you need to rethink your stance on the need for apology. If you're listening to this tape with a group of other wives, share together your individual past experiences and or present need of apologizing. And as you do, be supportive of each other with acceptance and affirmation. Turn off the tape. We come now to the subject of sex, and as Charlie would say, we're moving into the heavy stuff. Sex is a primal place for communication in every marriage relationship. On another tape in this series, Charlie was asked if sex is essential to a good marriage.
I have known one or two marriages that said they were happy without sex. And I have known some that were happy in periods when one or the other, particularly when the male was impotent, that said that they got through to a happy relationship. But generally, I think we could say that a good sex relationship is really simply an indication that other things are wonderful in the marriage.
And on this premise, we review now, at some length, this subject of sex as a place for husband-wife communications. In an address delivered on another occasion, Charlie shared an interesting discovery about a man's relationship to the female body.
I have discovered that almost without exception, unless a man is sick, the more he relates to the body of a female, the more likely he is to relate through the vocal cords. And remember, we're not saying 100% of any of this is true, but you can count on that about 98% true. What's the matter, then, in so many marriages? There are marriages where there's a good sex life and nothing else. Very rare. If sex is spiritual, which we believe it to be, then the more communication there is with the Lord and with each other, the more dynamic the sex relationship is going to be.
But, as Charlie went on to say, sometimes a woman is hanging up communication between herself and her husband vocally because she doesn't know what she's doing sexually. Then Charlie told about Libby and the unique way she discovered what she was not doing in the boudoir.
Libby came to me to check a possibility. She said, I have a brother who is a real swinger and he has some very fine prostitute friends. So Libby made a date through her brother with a prostitute. And she went and spent an hour with the prostitute. And she said to the prostitute, what do you girls do to keep a man coming back? You must be doing some things I'm not doing. And the prostitute told her.
And what did the prostitute tell Libby?
Basically, two things. One was, we let the man do anything that his wife won't let him do. And she said about 95% of the men who come to us would like to love their wives as freely as they love us, but their wives won't let them. That's one thing she said. And she was talking, of course, about what many women call the bizarre oral intercourse. So she said, we let him do anything that he wants to do. And then she said, the second thing is that we are aggressive when he wants us to be aggressive. And the prostitute told Libby pretty much what has got to be a fact, that the average woman sort of hangs back and lets her man take the lead. And there are times when a man really wants a tiger in the bedroom or at the front door when he comes home. How long has it been, question mark? How long has it been since you met your man at the door and climbed all over him and let him know that you were really turned on?
Boy, do I remember the first time that happened at our house. Like, wow. That's what she told them. Well, there are some women who get out their hammers and beat on a guy who is interested in his sexy secretary at 80 words a minute and other things. And there are some women who withdraw and act hurt. And then there's a woman like Libby who says, let's find out what's going on. Maybe we could celebrate some of these same celebrations in our love. All right. Maybe you can't give yourself that much. I hope you can. Let me just say again where we started. Sometimes a man will relate through the vocal cords if he relates better through the body.
Let's pause here in Charlie's discussion and give you a few minutes to react to his comments, especially the statement that a man relates better with the vocal cords the more he relates to the female body. Do you agree or disagree? What has been your experience? Turn off the tape. We continue now with a series of questions and answers and comments shared at various Fun Family seminars. They will further enhance your understanding of the importance of a good sex relationship to open communication in marriage.
Where does a woman find a prostitute to talk to?
There are two sources, I think. One would be a bellman at the hotel. And another would be a taxi driver. If you really do want to go this route, which I would recommend for certain types of women, you know, with certain types of men.
Couldn't you get the same kind of information from some legitimate books?
Would you like to recommend some of these books for us? For instance, do you have...
Well, Joy of Sex, and Dr. Rubin has a new book on getting more out of sex.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that if you're the type who can get information from a book, that's good. And there are many people, obviously, who are. There are some of the books you want to watch. I think some of them are a big put on. But some of them are very good. So you might get the same information. I don't buy many of these books because Martha and I have read them all. You know, all the ones in the history, and we finally gave up. We decided they didn't have anything to say to us. You know, we read everything you always wanted to know about sex, and we decided we didn't want to know that much. We wanted to invent a few things ourselves, and, you know, imagination is a wonderful part of sex. We read The Sensuous Man, The Sensuous Woman, The Sensuous Couple, and we decided that they don't want any of them compare to the thing we've got going between us. They don't really know where it's at.
We went home silent after your comment to the extent, if a man isn't interested in sex, he should see a doctor. This I've been begging for years and years. We were silent today. Everything else is going good for us. We have even been praying together a little.
There's going to be a dead silence in any home when you finally face this problem because, of course, it is a tremendous blow to the man's image of himself when he becomes impotent. As long as he isn't projecting it on you and saying, you know, if you were more sexy, then I'd be interested, then he is just suffering inside, and he's never going to get cured until he admits it and gets some help of a professional nature. I assume every one of you would be giving it all you've got, that you know all the wiles of womanhood, how to dress, how to maneuver, you know, how to do your thing. And if he's just flat not interested, it's going to take time and outside help to work it through. I'm glad that you're praying together. That might be one of the things that will give him the courage to face his problem. I would never fail, without being abroad about it, I'd never fail to tell him, honey, I'm just really in bad shape, sexually. I'm not getting it. I need your love. Without hammering at it, I'd just let him know that you're aching sexually, if you are. And I would think you would be, if your husband's impotent. Once you're used to it, that ought to be normal, hadn't it? You to be hurting. I'd let him know that he has a responsibility to you he's not fulfilling, and maybe chasing this out of the shadows is going to be a very healing thing.
What about variety in sex and what some would say are extremities in sex?
My wife thinks variety in sex is evil. I think we are missing a lot by her one position only attitude. I also think I might be healthier mentally if there was more freedom between us. She makes me feel almost evil to even want more. Do you think I am wrong, or is she?
I think that she's wrong, and he's right. Variety is the spice of life, and I just have a feeling that there are 67 different positions for intercourse, right? According to the Japanese. And I think that every one of them ought to be tried to find out which one you like best. Now, Martha and I went into Cincinnati a while back and picked up a book on 148 different positions for intercourse, which was something new to us. That's twice as many as the Japanese say there are. And we took it home, and we discovered that our favorite position wasn't in there. Well, boy, don't you think we were proud of that at 58? So I'm the wrong one to ask about this, because I just believe, and Martha does too, praise the Lord, that the more variety, the better. You ought to try everything, as long as it doesn't break your back and it doesn't hurt both of you emotionally, or either one of you emotionally or physically. Now, how are we going to help this girl, though? That's the question, isn't it? It isn't just, you know, having fun with it, which we can. There's a possibility she needs professional help, some counseling, because she's probably heard every argument that he's got. Chances are pretty good that unless she gets it from somebody who can help her locate her hang-ups, that she isn't going to unfreeze from the missionary position. And I would hope that you would be able to lead her to that kind of a treatment. But maybe some books would help her, too. Gee, I remember the first books of this kind that we bought. Man, when Martha first read it, she couldn't believe it, you know. And maybe, if it wouldn't scare her to death, you don't want to do that, I don't think. It would be a good idea to get her a book on the different positions for intercourse. We get a whole lot, Martha and I, out of reading certain things that stimulate us. Now, I don't go for hardcore pornography because it's so phony, but some of it is just simply beautiful. Of course, the Song of Solomon is the classic, and if you can read it interpreted in the Bible in basic English or right out of the Hebrew, it's very pornographic, isn't it? Yes, and wonderful. But I think one of the most turn-on books I know in literature is Fanny Hill, Memoirs of a Woman of Pleasure. I'd recommend that you get that and read it. It's pornographic, I think we'd have to say. But it's very beautiful, too. Just beautiful English. And Martha and I read this together, sometimes in bed at night. And I think a certain amount of this, as long as we understand it and don't think it's dirty. The dirt is really in our head, isn't it? But we have to be careful of this, too, because it can be very cheap and vulgar, and it can be too heavy a load for a woman. But I've taken too long to answer that. I just hope this girl can get some help, because she's missing so much. It isn't what they're doing wrong. But he's right. That's his question, wasn't it? He's right, we think. Martha would say so, too. He's right, and she's wrong, and she's the one that needs help in this particular case. Okay?
Do you think a woman has to put up with oral sex, or why do men want this?
Obviously, oral sex is a big problem. And because I knew that this was true, I wrote down four answers to the question why a man is interested in oral sex. Let's define the terms. The terms are fellatio and cunnilingus. Fellatio is when the female performs oral sex with her mouth, lips, tongue on a male. Cunnilingus is vice versa. Now, girls, I thought it would be helpful for you to know why a man likes oral sex. It is true, isn't it, that generally it is the woman who is bothered about this and not the man. I've known very few cases where the woman wanted oral sex and the man didn't respond. I was on the board of a psychiatric hospital in Houston, Texas for 8 years, and I sat there on the board and listened to these people read their papers. And I heard them read their papers on fellatio and cunnilingus, and I wanted to tell you girls why the psychiatrists say that a man likes oral sex. Now, there are many, many reasons, but there were four that registered with me. And here they are. First, every person on earth, the psychiatrists say, including the female, but certainly the male, has a desire to get back into the human womb at some time. It's warm there. There are no problems there compared to the problems in the cruel, cold world. And this man, then, is reverting to his deep, subliminal desire to get back into the human womb. Okay? One. Now, you buy this or not. You know, I don't know what to buy when I hear these guys read their papers, but I think that
they're pretty smart, and some of the things they say are right on. Number two, they say that every man has a very serious yearning through his childhood, and particularly in his relationship with his mother, to be extremely intimate with a female. What is more intimate than cunnilingus? Now, we've talked about two reasons, both of which feature the cunnilingus approach, where the male approaches the female with his mouth, lips, and tongue. He wants to get back into the womb, and he has a desire to be intimate. Now let's move to the fellatio side and note, according to the psychiatrist, that the male, when he offers his penis to the female for fellatio, is giving her his prized possession. Is there any man here who would argue with this? Of course. We would. We'd say, I have some prized possessions that are more precious than my penis. What are they? Does anybody care to make a nomination? So, say the psychiatrist, these are the eggheads, the sharp guys saying, he is offering you his prized possession. And why? Because he is saying, my mother deprived me of this intimacy by the very nature of circumstances, but I am offering to you, darling, the very best I have. Believe that? That's what the psychiatrists say. That's one possibility. Or, quote exactly from one of my psychiatrist friend's papers, the man is saying, you, mother, deprived me of your thing. See, I am offering you my thing. Ego trip. This is also in the fellatio department, where the man is offering his organ to the female. The psychiatrists say that every male has a desire, again subliminal, to humiliate a female. And that something like this is taking place occasionally, in that he wants to demean her to the very lowest common denominator. Is that true? Again, I don't know. I'm simply giving it to you the way it came through to me. Now, there are many other reasons psychologically oriented, but Martha and I have another reason. And this is that we think it's just plain fun. If God made the male and the female sex organ, they ought to be for each other's enjoyment. If you both like it, and if you get turned on this way, I want to read you a letter, or a quotation from a letter. I gave a review of something like this at a meeting, a mixed meeting like this one, and I got a letter from a young wife, and she said, thank you so much for explaining that. She said, I never realized before that I could minister to my husband's psychological needs with this. And when I came down off my high and mighty, things got better between us. End of quote.
So good sex is essential to a good marriage relationship. And when you're free to talk about it with each other and to participate in it to the fullest extent that's possible for both of you, then you're on target for opening up the avenues for mutual communication. Well, we've given a lot of time to a review of this subject, but because of its importance and because so many of the questions Charlie receives have to deal with sex and marriage, we felt justified in giving it this much emphasis. We hope that it's been helpful for you. Now, let me suggest that you pause in your listening to reflect on and or discuss these questions and comments. You might want to rewind the tape and re-listen to this section. Do this now, then turn the tape on again for the last section on duet of prayer. Turn off the tape. Everywhere he goes, when Charlie Shedd concludes a presentation or discussion on relationships and marriage, he always closes with what he believes is the secret of all secrets to a great marriage, and that is a husband and wife sharing together in a duet of prayer. If you are really interested in this area, let me recommend that you obtain the last cassette in this series on Prayer and Duet, The Secret of Secrets in Marriage. There, Charlie and Martha share with you their goals for a praying home and how they have done it in their home. But here, as a conclusion of this tape and a review of his comments on prayer as he has shared on this recording, listen to this brief summary of Charlie's emphasis on how you can possibly get your husband to communicate by getting him to pray with you.
The key of keys is prayer together, a duet of prayer. That's where it's at, basically. This guy who is walled off, who is living behind a barricade, if you can get him praying with you, you've taken the biggest step of all to getting a communication going. We think that the greatest kind of prayer is silent prayer to begin with. We pray out loud together often now. We pray on our knees every now and then, not daily, but every now and then we pray on our knees together. But regularly, at least once a day, we pray silently together after sharing the things that are on our heart that we'd really like, in the deep places of our souls, to get out of our system into the stream of prayer. And then we hold hands after talking about these things and pray silently, each of us carrying them to God. And then when we're through, somebody says the Lord's Prayer. We start the Lord's Prayer and we say it together, and that's our prayer time. Great prayer is like moving aside some rushes and you see a new little path into somebody else's heart that you didn't even know was there. Great prayer is like a call from across the canyon, a call of need. Great prayer is like a bulldozer crashing into a stone wall to remove an obstacle. Great prayer has got it all. The union of two people in prayer is the secret to a dynamic union of two people in communication at its purest.